And not allow a situation where the rich get richer all the time and the poor get poorer. That's wrong.
I want to thank you very much for being on this show, for your life service, Bishop Gumbleton, Bishop Thomas Gumbleton, former auxiliary bishop of the Detroit Archdiocese and leading voice for peace, justice, and civil rights in the United States. That does it for the show. I'll be at New York University tonight, NYU Cantor Film Center at 6 o'clock with Democracy Now's Sharifa Belkadus and Egypt Independence Lina Atala for a discussion about the current state of affairs in Egypt. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Barker, Nick Fels, Aaron Mate, Nerman Sheikh, Steve Martinez, and Malcolm Hani Masood, Rabbi Karen, Dina Guzder, and Littlefield Martinez, DeRosa, Nemo Allen. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Becca Staley. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. We are local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. Nobody's as local as we are on the radio here. And we're coming to you live from Henry Ford Community College, WHFR.FM on the website. Our show today begins by featuring an interview with Henry Ford Community College Counselor Diane Green and my co-host Dennis Reimars, are you the second or just the first?
I am the news director. I'm not sure.
I know he is.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. He's the first. He's the original Dennis Reimars, the same one that was here last week. And he's going to talk to Diane. And it's a pretty important topic, and that is, of course, jobs, but specifically something that happens every year in two different spins that the counseling department does beyond their usual counseling for jobs. So,
do we? I think I need a little boost down here. I'm on microphone number two.
Yeah,
right there? Hello? All right.
I always love to give you a boost.
All right. I appreciate that. Hello, Diane. Thank you for joining us.
And thank you for inviting me.
I think we need
Yes.
Oh, there we go.
All right.
I have to say, okay, the women had their chance in the fall, and now it's our turn, meeting guys. We get a chance right now to do something. And every year we talk about this, and every year I argue that what we call non-traditional is becoming less and less non-traditional. Do you know what I mean? And the guys are going into careers that women have traditionally held and so forth. But still, these are very, very unique. And I think overall, still the majority of people that have the jobs that we're talking about for this particular seminar are women.
That is true.
Okay,
that's
so
very true.
We'll take a step back. I guess I'm assuming that everybody knows all about this. But this is a non-traditional health careers for men. And again, we did something similar for women in the fall. And what's a typical job that would be covered in this particular seminar?
Okay, let me start off by clarifying. This is not intended to help individuals come in find a job.
Okay.
It is intended to introduce the audience to careers that are offered through programs here at Henry Ford Community College in health careers that are non-traditional for men. And there we're looking at nursing. We're finding more and more men are going into nursing, but still an area that is highly populated by professional women in the field. Physical therapy assistant, respiratory therapy, radiography, surge tech, ophthalmic technician, pharmacy tech, and our medical assistant and physical therapy programs. So this is really introducing men to the programs available at Henry Ford that can train them for highly paying jobs in those particular areas.
So this is to create awareness and, like you said, to
Absolutely.
Make the introduction, but ultimately the people going into these, not necessarily the seminar, but they may come away with it with a new desire or objective to get into one of these fields.
Absolutely.
Which is a job. And you said high paying, and let's face it, health careers at after a certain level really are pretty stable and pretty well paying. So I'm really glad we're focusing on the health careers for these this
Absolutely.
Summer.
Absolutely. And the reality is health careers will be a very strong area of employment for many, many years to come. When you look at us baby boomers, and there are a whole bunch of us who are retiring, who are going to need and demand medical care and assistance. So work in the health career fields is going to be strong for many, many years
Absolutely.
To come.
Now, what will participants, I know that you said you would like them to call. We want to get a head count, although reservations aren't necessarily required. I think that will help a heck of a lot, won't it?
Well, we would like for them to call and make reservations. We want to put it out there so everyone has the date. So pull out your planner and mark it Wednesday, April the 24th. Beginning at 8 o'clock a.m., we'll end the day at approximately 1:30 p.m. in the afternoon. We will be located in the Health Careers Education Center. That's to facilitate all the tours and the opportunity for individuals to see certain ones of the labs. And we are asking that you call for reservations because we're going to be providing a free continental breakfast.
Now we're talking.
And a box lunch, and we need to have some numbers. So we don't want to not have enough food to accommodate the individuals attending. So
we never want that.
On your planner, write down 313-845-9617, and Brenda Redinger will sign you in for the seminar event.
Cool. And you said you'll be there as early as 7:30 for people?
Yeah, we'll be setting up and getting things ready. So if individuals want to come in and have a little quiet period before we kick off the program at 8:15, they can do that.
Okay.
Now, one of the things that I think is also important is to remind individuals that this is going to occur on the campus, the main campus of Henry Ford Community College on Evergreen Road. We will have parking signs up and directing individuals to where they can actually park on campus for the event.
That's a good point because school will actually be going on during that day. It's a Wednesday.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
And it starts early enough so you actually have an opportunity to beat the rush and get in here and get a good parking spot before we kick off the morning. And that's always a good thing because parking can be challenging sometimes.
What can somebody expect, though? What are some of the things? I see the lineup here. What
We try to give them a real full half day. They will receive information from student outreach and support on some of the additional funding programs that are available, one of which is a program through Perkins. Which affords individuals with the grade point average an opportunity to get grant money to subsidize their education and training. We will have Brenda Hildreth from our Student Outreach and Support Office who will be talking to that piece of the program. Chad Austin will be joining us, and he, in fact, will be talking about the Placement Office and what kinds of things they do to support students here at Henry Ford, as well as our graduates. Our lineup, then, for the presentations include our Medical Assistant Biller Program, Physical Therapy Assistant, Respiratory Therapy, Radiography, Nursing, Surgical Tech, Ophthalmic Technician. That's one of our newest programs here on campus, and that deals with the eye. That's training individuals to be assistants to ophthalmologists.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, we need a linguistics.
That was a mouthful, wasn't it? And then, of course, our Pharmacy Tech program. We will have students who will be involved in the event. They will be talking about their experience currently as a student, and we will have individuals coming in who have graduated from certain ones of the programs talking about how the program prepared them for what they're doing, where they're working, and what that work life is about.
Awesome.
We have Diane Green from the Henry Ford Community College Counseling Department here on the Journal for the first segment today. And she's talking about, again, the non-traditional careers for men seminar that's going to be here, main campus, on Wednesday, April the 24th, starting about 8 o'clock in the morning. You get there a couple of minutes early if you'd like to 1:30 in the afternoon. Let me just repeat the registration number, because it's free, but if you call ahead, then you're certain to get in a continental breakfast and a box lunch, as well as the great meeting and a good seat, too. So it's 313-845-9617. So it's 313-845-9617. I have a question, Diane, though. The downside is these are careers that do require classes and knowledge about science, and maybe even a certain level of mathematics. So these are serious study programs, right?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. And the programs, and I think individuals need to also be aware that these are not programs you just apply to the college and you walk in taking the classes. Mm-hmm. There are admission requirements and standards to go on the wait list for these programs. And we do that because there are only so many seats available in each of the program. So we want students to know that we're looking for students who are very serious about pursuing their studies in these areas, because you have a pretty rigorous number of items that have to be done prior to even going on the wait list, mm-hmm. which includes math and science-based courses, and the programs themselves are very math science-based.
I assume the writing skills have to be up to snuff to write all those reports out, too, about medical procedures and what they've done. And so obviously getting through the first year, or maybe both of the composition classes that are required of all college students here, it is pretty essential. But certainly, because of the limited number of seats, and because you're expecting people that can complete the program, you don't want to admit people, and then all of a sudden, people, it's not what they want, not what they are, you know, are capable of doing, and they have to drop out, which would be unfortunate because they spent that time maybe going the wrong route. So these kinds of seminars are great. Of course, the HFCC Counseling Office does provide one-on-one assistance in terms of talking to students who make appointments and come in about some of their career choices. But this is a very intense situation. It's well-structured, and this really helps men, in particular, look at career opportunities that they might not have considered before.
Absolutely. And on that day, I do have two other counselors who will be working with me. We will actually be available during the seminar to answer questions that they have. And then, of course, we encourage them to do follow-up appointments with the counseling office to look at admission requirements and even talk more in depth about the requirements of the program. Many individuals have already had some experience in college, so looking at how that course preparation may in fact apply to the program they're wanting to pursue. So yes, we are available through the counseling office 5 days a week to accommodate students. Office hours are 8 o'clock in the morning, Monday through Thursday, until 6 o'clock p.m. We see our last appointment at 6, and Friday from 8 o'clock to 4:30 with our last appointment at 4.
Except for spring and summer.
Yes, we go on a 4-day work week.
I'm That's right.
Why do you look so excited?
I love it.
Well, because they have to make up their 40 hours by staying longer on
That's
those first
right.
4 days.
Okay.
So there's
a long weekend.
Still the same number of days you have to come earlier. I have to say, and we have opinions on the show that are not necessarily those of Henry Ford Community College, by the way, Diane, but, you know, in my day, I had counseling by my high school counselor. And it was required, not just me, but for everyone, about what job will you want to go into when you graduate from high school. And this started in the 7th grade. Now, I was in a high school where it was 7 through 12, so Flat Rock, and we, you know, it was no junior high at that time. That's how long ago it was.
Wow.
And so we had the same counseling department. We saw the same people for 5 years, and they made use of their time. So all of us, I think, once every semester had to have an individual appointment just about what potential jobs might you be qualified for. And sometimes they would give us a variety of interest tests. They already knew our academic work, even as early as the 7th grade and 8th grade and 9th grade. And they would give us books to read about the careers.
Mm-hmm.
So we could think about it that way. Certainly in junior, senior years, we were allowed in those days to do enough field trips with one sort of club or another, like future teachers and things. We could visit colleges, but also visit hospitals and things and explore. I hate to say it, but when my daughter graduated from Dearborn High School in the 90s here, from it was the one in the middle of town.
Etzel Ford.
Yeah. No counseling about careers. They only saw a counselor if they were in trouble somehow. And so there was no, I mean, I don't know what the budgets are these days, or I know there's plenty of crises in high schools that counselors have to deal with, and they have some specialists about those things. But it's so essential, and it's wonderful that Henry Ford Community College, at least, and probably other colleges too, and actually provide this additional assistance in thinking about and choosing your life's work, or at least your first choice for life's work. Nobody can ever stay in anything all their life, even though I have, but that's
that's not typical.
Thing. Yeah.
Well, I
yeah.
have too. So well,
that, you know, you just brought up an interesting point. It would be really, if I don't know if this is even feasible, but it'd be great if the college could go out to the community and do these kinds of seminars within the community with the high schoolers, and then they would draw them to Henry Ford.
Well, there's nothing preventing high school. And I would prefer it be, of course, seniors who are really wanting to come in and get more information about these particular careers. But one of the things, and I just want to go back and kind of dovetail on your comments, we make available to any current student, prospective student, or individuals from the community who may be thinking about wanting to come to school. Through our Career Resource Center, we administer a variety of assessments that can be very, very helpful in helping individuals at least begin to organize their thinking. I always tell students it's not magic. Bells aren't going to ring, but it does help you to begin to organize that thinking. We also have classes that we offer through the counseling division. We have our Counseling 120 Career Exploration.
Just a little one-credit hour experiences.
And then we have Life Work Planning.
16 hours officially. And
Life Work Planning is a three-credit hour, which is more intense and provides a great wealth of information for students. So we have a lot of things on tap that, in fact, are readily available to assist students coming in, prospective students, members of the community who want to come in and take advantage of these. And again, it's just contacting the counseling office.
Right, and in high school, my counselor suggested a whole number of things, careers I should go in along the way for 5 years. But it was obvious all my tests.
Rocket scientist, brain surgeon.
Seriously, I was strongest in science and math. I mean, I was pretty good
and
in the other areas.
That's obviously not what you were interested in.
Well, no. And there was a couple of those special sort of emotional interest related surveys. It was so revealing for me in my senior year. It was obvious I wanted to do something more with people directly, and teaching was the career that was at the top of the list for the things that I really would be excited about. I mean, sure, I can do the other things. So it's kind of interesting that not only did I become a teacher, and I started out as an English teacher, and teacher is very interactive and really, really great at the college level. That's what I wanted. But also, I didn't start out as a telecom teacher, you know, radio, TV, film. But I still had the, you might say, ease of acquiring knowledge about science and math and electronics and things that, I mean, I'm talking an electronic microphone. I'm looking at an electronic mixer. And yesterday I was here fixing some stuff, not because I'm an engineer, but just because it's easy for me to do the simple things that involve this field. Some people might have a little anxiety or about technology. That kind of exploration is so essential, and I'm so sorry. I mean, we used 2 years ago when I was head of the telecom area in the fine arts division, I know we were asked to participate by the HSCC counselors in like once a year we would invite in high school counselors to let them know what sort of programs we do have.
That was a great program.
Do we still do that? See, the problem is those counselors don't do that sort of career advising anymore. There's not enough of them.
Well, let me say this. Let me correct myself. The admissions office does once a year bring counselors on campus.
We do have that experience.
We do. Okay. And the topic may change from session to session. But Doug Freed and his staff oversee bringing counselors on campus. They usually come maybe 7:30 in the morning.
I remember there was a free breakfast.
Yes. And so they They still do that.
Okay, good, good.
But what we were doing was actually bringing them on campus and giving them a full introduction to the programs on campus and bringing in lead faculty to talk about their programs. And they so thoroughly enjoyed that. And I think it just it got to a point where it was a little bigger than what we could continue to afford. Yeah, and unfortunately,
I remember in the heydays when we had a budget, but we had like 80, 90 people, concerts that came. I mean, it was by invitation. Mm-hmm. They didn't have to come. I mean, it wasn't their job, but they decided to come and explore, and they were fascinated and amazed. And I know we still do, of course, tours for students from high schools. I see group tours starting up even now. And that's also essential. But a lot of people, I think, high school students especially, are thinking about careers just based on TV ads or how they see a career portrayed in the media. And
or TV shows.
Right, that's what I mean. The media, yeah. Like TV shows. Like, I want to be a policeman or a lawyer. It doesn't, first of all, it's not easy to get into those jobs. But secondly, there's things they don't show you that are not necessarily fun or interesting, but they're part of the daily job, and that's where the reality sets in. Find out about the daily job. And so this Non-Traditional Careers for Men seminar coming up April 24th is going to be doing just that for the participants in regard to these 6, 7, 8 health career area programs that we have. Oh, one follow-up question finally for you, Diane, on that. In my head, some of these are 2-year degree programs, certificate programs, but most of them probably imply that to really stay in the field, you need to transfer to a 4-year school.
Not necessarily true.
No. So it's
not
necessarily that you have true. To listen to the presentations
Absolutely.
As to which way they can go.
Right. We have one area that's presenting which offers certificates, but in the last couple of years, that particular program, medical assistant, has coupled with the business department where individuals can actually earn associate's degrees in medical practice, facilities, business management, or medical practice, clinical management.
Sort of a specialty within
absolutely.
The business area.
Yeah. We're seeing, for example, with nursing, which is a 2-year associate degree, more and more individuals are continuing on for a bachelor's degree. Pharmacy tech, which is the other certificate program that's presenting, individuals wanting to continue on that would have to go into pharmacy. And most pharmacy degrees now are PhDs, which is interesting.
But most of this coursework would transfer to the 4-year program or the doctorate program. No?
No. For example, physical therapy assistant. If I said I wanted to go into the physical therapy assistant program, those clinical classes would not transfer.
Clinical, right. Those are experience ones.
Absolutely.
Learn by doing ones, right.
But the liberal arts, science, the humanities, social sciences,
the prereqs.
Those would, in fact, transfer. And then once they're in a physical therapy program, then they are taking the clinical courses that are required at that level.
So it varies there, but it's still, that's important to know because people know, I just take 1-year classes and I get a high-paying job. No, first of all, you've got to be qualified to get into the program here, but also you've got to work hard when you're in the program. And some of them, some more, some less, you're also going to want to consider continuing your education to the 4-year degree to really get a secure professional
As I say, the biggest
situation.
Bang for your buck.
And I have to think that taking these classes, even though some of the clinicals might not transfer, will make taking the 4-year degree, getting the 4-year degree a heck of a lot easier.
I think it does because you go in with the practical experience of having worked in the field, and I think that's worth $1 million.
Absolutely.
Or at least
a free seminar.
Yes. So we're hoping folks are going to come out and join us on Wednesday, April 24th, 8 a.m. Registration begins with continental breakfast. We have a full day. We'll finish up around 1:30. Please call 313-845-9617 to make your reservations, and we look forward to seeing you on Wednesday, April 24th.
Well, thank you very much, Diane Green, HSCC counselor, for that background. And we're going to continue mentioning to our listeners about this. And if you happen to be a female and you're listening, say, what about us? Of course, that's every fall.
That's true.
Okay, so there's non-traditional health careers for women, maybe non-traditional careers in general for women, too, that the counseling department does every fall semester. So now,
in the fall, we do it on technology. Ooh, for women.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
All right. I'm all in favor of that. Let's listen to some Jim Hightower now. We'll be back with more of the new WHFR Journal for Friday, April 12th.
One of the finest benefits that our global society derives from having an elite class of super-rich individuals is the priceless advice they offer to the rest of us. For example, America was blessed last year with the special wisdom of Mitt Romney. As he struggled to get traction among the common people for his presidential campaign, he reached out to the youthful spirits who had sparked the Occupy Wall Street protests. In a father-knows-best tone, Mitt informed them that political anger toward financiers who've achieved financial success is wrong-headed. Rather, he lectured, they should emulate the rich. Take a shot. Go for it. Get an education. Borrow money from your parents, he advised. Lest you think that Romney's perspective is peculiarly American, get an earful of Gina Reinhart. She owns Australia's largest mining empire and is the world's richest woman, holding $30 billion in personal wealth. Last year, she offered this insight on what the riffraff of her country need to do to get ahead. If you're jealous of those with more money, do something to make more money yourself. Spend less time drinking and more time working. Did I mention that Gina got to the top the old-fashioned way? Not by working her way up, but by inheriting her fortune from Daddy Reinhart. Ironically, while this fabulously rich lady admonishes the laboring masses that harder work is their ticket to more money, she's campaigned aggressively to slash Australia's minimum wage. How low would she go? Speaking to her peers at the posh Sydney Mining Club, Reinhart expressed fondness for the African model. Africans want to work, she explained, and its workers are willing to work for less than $2 a day. This is Jim Hightower saying, such social and economic perceptiveness is why Gina, Mitt, and their ilk are so appreciated by the world's workaday people.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit hightowerlowdown.org.
You're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, our big-time radiothon. Once a year on the air, we ask for your pledge. Not this week. Starts Sunday, 10 a.m. Or before, actually. We're going to have some people here during the classical music to take your pledges, too, starting, I think, about 7 a.m. Oh, my gosh. And we really need your help. But listen next week. If you just got to get that urge to help support WHFR out of your blood right now, you can go to our website, whfr.fm, click on the Radiothon 2013 banner, and you can make your credit card pledge right there. But back to our show here. We have an upcoming interview with Chris Bremer, who is very busy. The play here at Henry Ford Community College is a serious drama. How often is that out there? I love serious, dramatic theater because it's so rare. And we have a play that actually won the Pulitzer Prize in 2009, just a mere 4 years ago. Pulitzer Prize, which is quality writing, you know, really great literature. And the play is called Ruined. Ruined. And it does talk about a moment in relatively recent African history, focusing on a woman and her family and their tragic situation. But these kinds of plays, you say, well, I can't sing along. It won't necessarily have a happy ending, but it has great meaning and significance to our human existence. And so thanks to Dennis Reimars, we were able to catch Chris Bremer yesterday in the midst of their preparations. The play just opened last night.
It opened last night. I want to say that we did the interview, Chris and I did the interview literally on stage, and you'll hear in the background, you'll hear a circular saw, you'll hear some yelling. And
oh, ambient noise.
It
I
is.
Love it.
And we're sitting literally on the stage, and we did not talk about, because I I knew that his time was short. Like you said, the play started yesterday. It is today, tomorrow, and Sunday, as well as next Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Mm-hmm. The Thursday, Friday, and Saturday performances are at 8 p.m. The Sunday is a matinee at 2. All of the performances are here in the Fine Arts Building on the southwest corner of campus. The tickets are $15 for adults and $12 for faculty, students, staff, and seniors.
Okay, let's catch the interview with the play's director, Chris Brummer. And we'll repeat all that information about this great play at Adderley Auditorium here on the main campus of Henry Ford Community College. Happening right now, in fact, today, this weekend, and next weekend, right?
Yes.
All right, here's the interview.
I'm sitting here on the set of Ruined, literally sitting on the set with the director, Chris Brummer. Chris, thank you so much for joining me for this interview.
Well, thanks for having me.
This is an intense play. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about it. First, the playwright.
Playwright Lynn Nottage won a Pulitzer Prize in 2009 for this piece. It deals with the realities of what's going on in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Right? Okay.
The civil war that's happening there, the three other countries that are sending in militias and armies, the brutality that is waged on the common citizens there, rape used as a weapon against women, the conscription of 7 and 10-year-olds into the army.
These are very real issues.
No, these are absolutely real issues that are occurring right now.
Okay, and you said it came out in 2009.
That's when it won the Pulitzer.
When it won the Pulitzer. When was it? When was it written? You know,
it was that year, 2008, 2009.
Okay, all right. We'll talk about some of the people from the college that will be in this, but how much of a challenge? Because there's, as a director, I'm sure you had your challenges as well as the actors.
Well, it's a very challenging experience because these characters that Lynn has created are so full and so real. And for many of our actors, this is their first show that they're doing. So it's a real step up from, let's say, a Sleeping Beauty or some of the other lighter shows that we've done. Even some of the musicals, which are tough in their own right. This requires that people go to a very different place emotionally, a dark place that most people don't want to go to.
Yeah.
Because it is about the horrors of war.
Yeah, and things that some of these kids in their own young lives haven't experienced.
Not at all. That was one of the reasons that I thought about choosing a piece like this, is that, we think how awful we have it here in Detroit and how, desolate and, bleak things are in our lives here.
Right.
Well, when you compare that to the reality that these characters are living, and these characters are all based on real characters that Lynn went over there and interviewed people and to create this script, you see that, the grass is sometimes a little bit greener over here, even though we think it's
so
bad.
As the director, is that something, obviously, that you want the audience to take away? So the realization or the awareness of...
The awareness of what's happening, and the fact that so much of this is generated by Western economies. You see, what's happening there is you've got a mineral that is critical in making cell phones work. They've discovered it in the Democratic Republic of Congo. So this mineral is worth so much money that rebel militias are fighting over it. The government's trying to control it. And, people are the casualties and bystanders of what's happening.
In that region, this is the competition for something native to that region is not new either. We've gone through different things.
Absolutely, but it's just gotten to a whole new level of brutality. So many people think of Africa as, the sort of Robert Redford out of Africa thing. It's nothing like that. It is really a very, very westernized, very low standard of living, brutal place to live.
Right.
And it's pretty scary there. But the beautiful thing about this show is that Lynn, the author, has created a humanity, a human spirit that lives through it, and it's actually a very touching and hopeful.
Let's talk about India, somebody that I know well, and mm-hmm. I saw India do, you talked about lighter things last mm-hmm. year, or the year before, summer before last, at the during the one-act plays. Mm-hmm. She was in a farce that my wife directed, mm-hmm. and was wonderful, awesome. This is the other end, isn't it?
Diametrically opposed. She is playing a woman who has had her life completely ripped out from under her. She's must now play a person who has lost a child, who's lost a marriage, who's been raped and brutalized by a militia. So just a whole different world.
It is.
And that was one of the reasons that we chose the pieces, that these were going to be very challenging experiences that the actors would have to portray.
Can you tell us about maybe another some of the other performances we will get to see?
Well, you've got Mama Nadi, who runs the bar. And, you know, you might think of her character as the sort of taking advantage of these girls, because it takes place in a brothel. And she's taken in these girls to... for lack of a better term, gives them a place to survive and not be brutalized by everyone. But it is a brothel, so she's selling them. And so her role is very, very tough. It's a really, she does a nice job in it.
Sure.
And it's a really very, very full, challenging role. And then there's her sort of salesman, the male, London Johnson, who's playing this role, comes in, and it's a real tough role, too. I mean, this is a guy who's a recovering alcoholic who goes during the show and goes, falls back off the wagon, ends up in the depths of despair, and then, well, you gotta come and see it.
I was waiting for that. Okay. Sounds like you're real excited about this.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate your time. The message, I guess, that I want people to know is that this is something, and I know it's a little bit graphic, there's a little bit, from what I read in the paper, a little bit of disclaimer.
Yeah, this is very much an adult show.
Sure.
I do not think that you want to bring anybody who's, you know, under 16.
Sure.
I mean, this is not for, and it's not for the faint of heart. I mean, because, you know, we're talking about brutal realities of life in the middle of a conflict.
And let me add one more thing. The seating is the...
It's on stage.
It's on stage. It's very intimate.
So there's 65 seats in the house. So if you want to come, you better make reservations early and get here early.
So I'm on stage right now as I'm talking to Chris, and 4 feet from here is where the audience will be, maybe, if that.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
You're in the bar.
Very intimate. Good, yeah. Good. Chris, thank you so much for sharing your time with us, and I know we look forward to seeing the play.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Well, I hope that inspires you just to hear the excitement and all the people working and building and creating. It's usually a team of dozens of people that have to be under the guidance of a superior director, such as Chris Bremer, who's done many great productions for us here at the college.
You can hear those dozens of people behind us sawing and hammering.
Certainly, we go down a list. Dr. George Popovich is head of our theater program, and Jerry Jablinski is the tech director,
mm-hmm.
and that's also a essential. We have people working on production design. And
Judy Fletcher helps with costume.
And makeup,
sure.
Costume, right. And that's all so essential. But I gave a little pitch at the beginning. This is serious drama.
Mm.
Okay? You can't sing along to it. You won't necessarily have a happy ending.
No.
But you will be ennobled, as they say, because you're learning about the human spirit. And it may be a tragic situation, but you're learning how these people cope and maybe even learning how to avoid that situation in the future. Now, the play has, it did, as I said, won the Pulitzer Prize as a work of literature in 2009, and it has been compared to, but it's not the same thing as, Bertolt Brecht's play from the 1930s called Mother Courage, which is a great, great play, and I actually had to study it as a lit major in college because his work of literature is brilliant. You may be familiar with Bertolt Brecht and his play, which was a musical called The Threepenny Opera, but Mother Courage was definitely not anything to sing about, but it was a tremendous experience of art. Okay, theatrical art. So we highly recommend this to you. Dennis, give the dates and times one last time, please.
Again, we missed yesterday, but it is tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday, as well as next Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The Thursday through Saturday performances are at 8 p.m. in the Fine Arts Building, the Edgar Auditorium and the Fine Arts Building on campus. And both Sunday performances are matinees at 2 p.m. The cost, again, for tickets is $15 for adults and $12 for faculty, students, staff, and seniors. And you can call ahead to have the tickets waiting for you at 313-845-9817. That is 313-845-9817. 9817.
Yeah, probably the doors open about half an hour ahead for each
Absolutely.
Of those performances. 7:30
yes.
on Thursday through Saturday, and that would be about 1:30 on Sunday. Certainly a really, really special thing. I mean, the theatrical productions in Dearborn are always fine, but we know that a majority of people want to go to musicals and or comedies. That's why they present them. But serious drama is oh so important to experience, and it's certainly will be rare to experience this and special and very special.
And
so I'll try to get there.
Bremmer does these edgy things. He did Suburbia a few years ago, and that was edgy as well, about some kids in their teen years and their angst that they were dealing with. So yeah, he's pretty good at this stuff.
Speaking of angst, let's get back to the news happening in Dearborn this last week, and we always appreciate our friends of the Dearborn Press and Guide and Times Herald for existing
and
publishing, and of course Patch.com and any other source we can possibly find. Just a little plug early here. Next week, special hour-long interview with Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. Right, he's going to be here for the whole hour, and of course we'll talk to him about just about everything we can think of. If you have any questions for me, if you think I won't think of them all, and I probably won't, you can email them to whfr@hfcc.edu and put in their questions for the mayor if you want to, and I'll try to make sure that the question or at least the topic comes up somewhere in that hour. We only have an hour, but he's always been extremely sharing and full of information, and so we'll try to get the facts for you in this upcoming city election season too.
And while we're on the topic, the following week we will have State Representative George Duraney almost for the entire hour.
Right.
He has a commitment right before that, but I'm told he can get here very close to 1 o'clock, and then the week after that we have on for some part of the show the Dave Mustonen.
Mm-hmm.
Who works with the
public information for the Dearborn Public Schools.
Thank you. Yes.
In regard to George Duraney, what a segue. there's a story in last Sunday's April 7th Press and Guide, and we'll ask him about this too. House Democrats, that includes him, unveil what they call Michigan's middle class plan, unquote, hoping to help families and seniors. And I'll just sum this up here. It's interesting that in this press release, Dearborn Heights two state reps, Dave Knezik and Andrew Kendrivas from Southgate. I'm sorry, they weren't both from Dearborn Heights. It says Dearborn Heights two state reps. But then Andrew is not.
Right.
Andrew's from Southgate. And then they joined fellow rep Diane Slavins. She's Democrat from Canton Township, so there's no two Dearborn Heights reps there. But anyway, but George is from this area. I'm sure he signed on to it, but I guess they got the credit for putting it together in the first place. But all the House Democrats are support this. And basically, it's provisions, and he'll go over them for you. They're trying to repeal most of the things that have already been done to hurt seniors, hurt our schools, taking away valuable, important funding and trying to make these things work better. Also, and I didn't go here myself, this plan called the Michigan's Middle Class Plan is at, it says here, Real State 04 State, which doesn't make any sense to me, .com. Real, like R-E-A-L, State, S-T-A-T-E, E, as I said, State, Real State, O as an O, Four as in F-O-U-R, state, S-A-T-E, .com. So that can't be the correct address. But if it is, I'm sure you can just go to Michigan Democratic Party or something. Google that and you can find it. They point out at the end of the story, the press release that they wrote the story from didn't say how the plans would be funded. And Democrats are in the minority in both houses of the in both halves of the Senate, of the legislature, which is in the House, they have 51 out of 59, and in the Senate, they only have 11 out of 26. And one Senate seat is vacant. Governor Rick Snyder, they point out here, is a Republican.
Mm. Is he?
Don't you know? So what's the hidden opinion here of Joe Slezak about this? They don't have a chance in a million unless they convert a lot of Republicans
right.
to undo what they just did.
Which, no. Not like
nonetheless, that. Should it be done, folks? Would you support it? If so, tell your elected representative. So we'll have George talking about that in detail, even though not, what did they say, a snowball's chance in hell,
right,
of getting passed. I mean, even our Republican governor is having trouble getting funding for road repairs and
right,
other things that he feels is essential. So just a difficult bunch of Republicans in the legislature to work with. And even, as you know, in terms of emergency managers, going against the vote of the public on these issues as of last November's election for
sure,
the things that the voters voted on, the Republicans and legislators just went ahead and went the other way and then protected it so that the voters couldn't have their way ever again on those issues. Well, that is just unbelievably undemocratic, and that's a small d there, not having anything to do with Democratic Party. But everybody needs a plan, everybody needs a goal, and the Democrats have their goal. So we'll see where that goes. But we'll be asking George about that and what it's like to be in the minority and not get your way very often in 2 weeks.
Well, let's word it differently than that, though.
Well, I hope so, but it's tough. It is tough in that situation. If there was such a thing as a collaboration of great minds, you know, having committees listen to educated opinion on all sides,
yep,
and then redrawing the rules and the laws to agree with the facts about the issues and not just voting according to some abstract plan or theory, you know, then there might actually be bills passed that would have a good potential of helping society. That's my naive view. But I thought that was the way that, you know, our elected representative government was supposed to work. But in fact, the laws that the Democrats are hoping to reverse and in the areas they want to change, these things were pretty much done by the lame duck Republican Congress without any sort of committee input from even Democrats on the committees, much less any testimony from people that might know better because they're out there in the real world.
You know, the way you put that is interesting, because it's almost as if some of the people in power are saying, you know what, people, voters, you don't know what's good for you. We do. So we're going to do this despite what you think you want.
Do you know what I mean? Well, and I heard, you know, on Craig Folly Show, which is one of my favorite radio shows, after this one, of course. That's every morning on DET, live from 10 a.m. to 12, Monday through Friday. And repeated at night, the same broadcast. I think it's 6 to 8 or 7 to 9. Anyway, they do it all over again in case you miss it during the day. And that's very valuable about local news. But he gets people to call in because he has a staff of screeners, as they're called, not screamers. but people that answer the phone and find out what people want to talk about and whether or not they're making sense or whether they're drunk or something. And then they're setting them up in a queue so that Folly knows he's got his choice of who to call on next based on that little summary. But they've been screened so that they are going to say something that's interesting, important, and it's not too crazy. And they try to have a balance of opinions, and that's always good. But people are asking, or Folly was even saying, well, you can always vote them out of office. No, you can't. Why? Because of gerrymandering. Because it's done once every 10 years based on the census that's taken nationally and, of course, in the state. And the people who are in the majority in the state legislature, when the time comes to redraw the lines of the district, and they're always redrawing these lines based on what? Based on how they can include the largest numbers of their own party in a district so that they will always win, like 51% to 49%. And, of course, the Democrats can play that game just as easily, and they've done it in the past. I think it's just got to end. I think it's got to end. I think, yes, I understand the districts have to have about the same amount of population in them. And that was the original reason for the redrawing the lines, that every representative should have about the same number of people in their district in that state. Okay? The same number of people. So they got the same ability to answer the phone or send out mailers or whatever. They all represent about the same number, and it should come pretty much from their home district, you know, and not some crazy gerrymandering where you're representing a few people living 30 miles away. We had that one situation with John Dingell himself. And, of course, I think he had a residence or still has residence in Trenton, Michigan.
Great.
And his district was redrawn in this little band up to include some of Dearborn and then all the way out to Ann Arbor. Little band, about 2-3 miles. And who did that? Republicans, because they thought, oh, we'll just include the most Republican areas within this crazy area that we can find that's somehow kind of close to and contiguous to his home district, so that maybe we can vote him out next time. Maybe the few Republicans will become the majority based on where they live and how we're drawing the lines to include them. And so, in fact, you're not getting a representation of the will of the people because of gerrymandering. And
what's manipulating a little bit. So I see that. And that's always going to be the case. Like you said, it does go both ways, doesn't it?
I'm trapped.
I know you are. It's okay. Kind of humorous watching.
I just ran over my own headphone cord. And
you know how painful that can be.
Ow. So we'll see where that goes. But that's just one story. Okay. Last week we talked about, this is from the Dearborn Times Herald, just this last Wednesday, 2 days ago, April 10th, HFCC picks Stan Jensen to be the next president of HFCC. He's got a great smile there, a picture on the cover. And we talked about this last Friday, but we didn't go into the background of the story. And this is by Bob Oliver. Don't believe I've read stories by Bob before. He must be new with the Times Herald. Then what he did, like every good reporter should do, is he went behind the scenes and actually talked to some people. So there's a little follow-up here. If you go to page... I think it's 4A. Oops.
8A.
8A. Mm-hmm. Okay. There it is. Okay.
What are you looking for?
Well, by golly, no. I'm good for Bob, okay, but I was thinking of the follow-up done by Katie Hedrick, who is on page 4 of the Press and Guide.
Oh,
sorry,
you're on
Bob.
A whole different paper.
Okay, yeah, no, she's the one that went more behind the scenes. And what's interesting is that, and one of the things that some of the faculty, even here at the college, was questioning about Mr. Jensen, he's not currently employed. Okay?
Well, then.
He got a buyout from Colorado Mountain College of $500,000.
Ooh.
To leave.
To leave. Well.
Okay. It's not like our sort of ending bonus for college president, a severance bonus.
Right.
But he got a buyout of $500,000, and he's available anytime, as he says here, anytime to come on in whenever they say that they want to have him come in. If Dr. Mee wants to leave a little earlier, she's still going to get paid through June.
June 30th.
Even if she leaves today.
Yeah.
And I don't know when that hasn't been announced when she is leaving. For sure. But he's available. Okay. And he's got significant background, both, of course, at colleges and finance, and he ran his own consulting business for 20 years, telling other people how to do their business. So he's got some opinions, and he said he was able to double the completion rate at his college, and that means students come in, but then unfortunately, an awful lot drop out because they weren't ready for college and they didn't know where they were going. They didn't get enough help with maybe some basic skills they needed, remedial help quick to stay in classes, you
right.
know.
That's legit.
Whatever it was, he was there when those initiatives were put in place. So a lot of good things to recommend him, and the board did think that overall it was fine. There was some grumblings, of course, and we know in the community Morris Goodman was recommending Ishmael Ahmed.
Yes, he was.
But as this points out here, Ahmed only had a bachelor's degree, and it's just sort of traditional. And also, I think it's a matter of
credibility, maybe?
Credibility, I sure. guess, to the outside world, if not to the inside world, that he has academic standing of at least a master's or a doctorate as a president.
Right.
They're almost always Dr. Me or Dr. Somebody.
Right.
And that's because they understand that academic side, and they have demonstrated by the extreme degree, as I call them, their dedication to detail and to new ideas, because that's usually what a doctorate is. It's not just a research project. It's actually new research and new ideas and a new thesis that you have to support. So it's research, but it's also some new ideas that you have to pull together. So Dr. Jensen had that, and even though that buyout from his last job still hasn't been explained to the people here at the college, but he had it looked like a pretty good career and recommendations from the people who bought him out at Colorado Mountain College. what I thought was interesting, too, and so they talk pro and con here, and Katie's done a great job of balancing the opinions and some of the behind-the-scenes scuttlebutt and talking to some board members about why they had these, why they felt Jensen was the best qualified, why they made their decision, because when they made the decision, they had that meeting a couple weeks ago on Wednesday, and they didn't really have much public discussion at that meeting. And so a lot of people were saying, and then they went and they voted in private, in a private session. And so a lot of the faculty at the college who believe in the democratic process here said, why was this all hidden? Why didn't you even discuss your individual opinions of the candidates for the public to hear where you stood? Well, now they sort of have in Katie's, Katie's article. And, of course, we wish Stan Jensen well. And, of course, we're inviting him in, if he's not doing anything else right now, to come on the Journal as soon as he gets here. What the heck?
Yeah.
As soon as he's in the area. It says that he will come in the area probably because it turns out that HSCC is interviewing for a new controller. That is our top business office personnel vice president. Marge Swan is leaving. This is a year of her retirement.
No kidding.
She's been a great, great
nice
help.
Nice lady.
Yep. And in fact, she's served the dual role of controller and vice president of business and auxiliary services. And those are areas that are typically two different jobs. And, you know, Dr. Mia said they should be two different jobs in the future. But the Board of Trustees, in their wisdom, said, well, we can't really talk about that now, and it'll cost double money,
right,
you know. So,
right.
So the person coming in is going to have to be somebody willing to do two jobs, typically, that are separated. And it's interesting that Jensen said he'd like to be in on the interviews, maybe even have input. And that's because the money person is your key colleague through all of that, and because of the rumors about the college here being somewhat in debt this year. And started out as $1.5 million, and they blamed it on Pell Grant students, although my sources off the record here at the college say that was a bogus distraction when they said that. It wasn't just the negative students. And now it's $7.5 million. And I could say some of the reasons behind the scenes of why it is that way. But in fact, It may not be mismanagement, but it's a matter of the way they paid these necessary bills out of certain parts of the budget that made it look like that. Very simply, we have a lot of new buildings on campus and a lot of buildings just finished up here. And for the first time ever, they decided to take the capital improvements of these buildings out of the general fund. Well, this is a big chunk of change anytime you're talking about new buildings.
Two brand new buildings.
Yeah,
right.
A couple.
Science.
Yeah. Well, there's the the Health Careers Tech Center next to the MTech on East Airborne. They just bought that.
Yes.
And apparently they bought it from general fund money. And then the Welcome Center is all new from a year ago. And then they've had some finalizing cost for the science building,
sure,
which was mostly paid by the state, but they're, you know, move-in cost, if you will.
Right.
And so most of these, I think, it's not going to take, if this is true, rocket science to straighten this out, because once you pay for these things, it's done being paid for.
Right.
I mean, there's maintenance costs and so on, but, I mean, still, for whatever reason, they decided not to go to a bond issue or to capital improvement issues. I don't know what they're going to do short term here. It looks like at the last time the board mentioned this and everybody on campus here, and we normally as faculty like to be in touch with what's happening and explanations of why, $7.5 million in the hole right now. But seriously, folks, it's money that would have been spent from some other way that wouldn't have been taken out of the general budget, and we wouldn't be in debt if they would have done it in the other way, okay? But it's politics, probably. But this is bad politics when it gives the college the bad reputation, and even, I think, besmirches Dr. Mee's reputation on the short term, even though she's leaving. It probably was her decision to go this way for whatever financial reasons. She thought it was easier because they needed the money right away, probably, and take it out. So, okay.
Boy, we're this went by fast, didn't it?
Boy, look at that.
I thought you were going to start and end the show with the story regarding the bond issue and the fact that they've determined that it will be on the November ballot instead of August.
Well, what's to say? They didn't listen to me, in my opinion. Though Jim Schoolmaster said it should be August, three people out of seven spoke up and said we should wait for November. And then he caved in, and then the other three people also caved in, who didn't even speak up. This is unbelievable, you know. And so we're going to lose 30 full-time staffers, teachers, other full-timers. They're going to have to be let go.
At least
so thank you very much, Board.
You know, and anytime we have a question on the show, being a news reporter and a news director of the station, I did what any good news director would do. I grabbed a cup of coffee I called Dave Mustonen, and I said, what's the deal here? And he said, these are two very separate issues. He said, the money that goes towards salaries is not the same money that would be in this bond issue.
No.
And I said, that's right. I said, but if the bond does not pass and they need to repair these schools, which they do, the money would come from, and he said, yes.
Fund,
that's
so
true.
Then they won't have the salary money.
Exactly. It's so it's indirect, fund. but it's still there. But I did ask him one question. I said, what's going on? Are you guys moving to the new city hall? And he officially said, no, that is not the plan.
Okay, you heard it here first.
You heard it here.
The school board, at least for the next year anyway.
We'll talk to him in 3 weeks, though.
Yeah, so maybe something will change
you
in 3 weeks.
You never know in Dearborn.
Okay. It's been announced, and only on Patch.com, this is from Wednesday after the papers came out, Dearborn is cutting the hours of part-time city employees. From 30 hours maximum to 28. Now, you say, well, it's only 2 hours difference, and that's right. It's not a big deal. But if you think about it, I figured it out here in my handy calculator, 6.7% pay cut for those people.
Substantial.
So if you can't work 30 hours, whatever the dollars are, and the city says the maximum is now 28, you, in effect, have lost 6.7% of your pay. Now, whether or not you've got to quit to find a job working at McDonald's or something, we don't know. But they have 518 regular part-time employees and 218 seasonal employees, and lifeguards, camp counselors, and so on in the summer, and they're all under this now 28-hour cap. Why? It's because if they kept them at 30, the rules on health care that must be provided by the employers, Obamacare, if you want to call it that, the federal government rules, means the city would have to pay health care for people to 30 hours.
And Dearborn Heights has been following the 28-hour max work week for quite a while. But you have to remember, Dearborn Heights is only open Monday through Thursday for non-essential, for non-safety. It's easier to work 28 hours in 4 days than it is in five.
But they still have no benefits. And, of course, the city says, hey, we just couldn't afford it if we have to pay for health care. Of course, somebody should pay for health care. Somebody should keep these people earning that extra 7% of pay. And it's always been the opinion, I'll end with my opinion, that universal single-payer health care at the federal level, all the best of the Canadian system, the British system, the French system, the German system, the best and least expensive health care plans in the world, with universal coverage for everybody, with no hassle up front, no decisions on the part of employers, no decisions on the part of the individual. You get your health care card, you get your health care at your hospital or from your doctor of choice, you get your prescriptions as the doctor says you need them, and that's it. Now, come on. Why can't America do the right thing? And it won't cost us more. Why? Because I know some of you hate me to say this, and I'm sort of a libertarian except for this. Sometimes the federal government can do the best job in providing some of these services. Okay? And for those that say, oh, no, it's never true. You want to fight a war with somebody? State by state? No, of course not. So, of course, I don't like wars and I don't like fighting. But, hey, if you got to do the military at the federal level, because that only makes sense, right? Then we need health care for everybody. I'd rather put the federal concern and the federal attention into keeping people alive than killing people.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to admit, both those areas, or I think you should admit, both those areas really need the federal government to give quality health care guarantees across the board to everybody in this country, and reduce costs at the same time. They all, you know, to reduce costs, that means, somebody's profits, the healthcare associations, the individual doctors, the big pharma, you know, the drug companies, they're all going to have to take a cut. But, gee, I thought we were already tightening our belts. Everybody else was. Why do they need these profits? Nobody knows. And that's what's costing this healthcare system to be the most expensive in the world, with only the seventh or eighth best